For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. We got the whole cave crew back. You know, guys, probably one of the biggest controversies when it comes to religion is, does it really matter? I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, there are those who are really into their religion. There are those who hate religion. And then there's almost probably a bigger group in the middle that it's like, well, religion, eh, who cares? One way or the other, you know, it might be true, it might not be true. What's good for you is good for you. What's good for me, you know, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious.
Right.
You know, you've got all kinds of, you know, different varieties within, you know, the believers, the non-believers, the, well, I'll believe when somebody proves it to me types. So how do we get past those kinds of things? And, you know, we're called to evangelize. We're called to go out in the world and spread the message. But, you know, how do you spread the message to somebody who just really doesn't care?
Yeah. And, you know, that's the fastest growing segment religiously in our country. Mm-hmm. You know, when pollsters break it down to what people believe, the nuns, those with no religious affiliation whatsoever, are increasingly the fastest growing group, and they may have even become the largest group. I'm not, you know, when they're not the majority, but I think when you break it down into, you know, Catholic, Evangelical, Protestant, Jewish, Muslim, Mormon, etc., those nuns come up as you know the largest group out of that whole plurality.
Yeah, nuns, N-O-N-E-S.
Right, exactly.
So the yeah, I think you're right. I think very recently that is the case. It's if I had to guess, I'm going to throw out like 23% or something like that. People now are self-identified as nuns.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's some large mega churches here in the Indianapolis area that are planting satellite churches.
Mm-hmm.
And as they plant these satellite churches, you know, you obviously don't just walk into a neighborhood where there are other churches in the area and just say, we're going to start a new church, especially when you're the big, huge guy on the block to begin mm-hmm. with. That becomes intimidating to the other churches. So they go in and they talk to the other pastors in the area and they point out, look, we're not here to steal your members. We're not here to compete with you. We're here to reach out to the unchurched. And when they lay out those percentages of the unchurched, the number of people who've never heard the gospel, who really don't participate in religion whatsoever, the nuns, and often it's the nuns, not by any, you know, kind of, I won't say fault of their own, but by any sort of choice, they just haven't grown up around any particular faith. But the percentages are huge. I mean, it's something like, you know, 2/3 to 3/4 of the population of Indianapolis. And, you know, Indianapolis is not a East Coast or West Coast city. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're here in the Midwest and, you know, a fairly Christian area.
Yeah, kind of on the edge of the Bible Belt.
Yeah, exactly. But it's still, you know, 2/3 to 3/4 of the people within our city really have never even been approached with the gospel.
Oh, wow. I had no idea the number was so large.
Yeah.
That's alarming, actually, and a great opportunity.
It is. And you know, not all of those are indifferent to mm-hmm. to the faith, but a lot of them are. You know, right. A lot of them are, sure. are going about their lives. You know, they've got their goals. They've got their aspirations. They're headed somewhere. And so this idea of adding yet one more activity that often is you know,
On our busy weekends already,
and an activity that is often maybe ununderstandable, if not outright boring to them, it's a hard sell.
Yeah. And also I think religious affiliation can present itself often mistakenly as like belonging to another club. You know, it's like you're joining another club and the entanglements and commitments that come along with that, and were already, you know, overbooked and overcommitted. So, and I'm not, it's not clear to me what the outcomes are. And I feel like, I may be of the mind that, you know, I'm a good person already, you know, I'm trying to do what's right. And maybe my moral code is primarily based on, say, the legal code, meaning as long as I'm not committing crimes according to the law, then I'm probably operating in a good place. And so what do I need religion for? And then, you know, a more skeptical or cynical view could also be another reason why I'm kind of indifferent to it, is because maybe in my estimation, maybe religion has sort of a mixed track record. Yeah, there's been some really holy people like a Mother Teresa, but then it also seems religion also seems to be the source of war, conflict, and a lot of other bad things, though. So I'm not sure I want to get entangled with something messy like that.
Yeah, and there's a third problem that complicates it even more, and that is a sort of indifference towards evangelism that comes from those of us who are Catholic. You know, we don't really always feel that impetus to reach out to the laity.
Yeah.
And especially our friends and neighbors who do seem to be genuinely in a good place. You know, it's one thing to reach out to that person that has a lot of problems in their life, mm-hmm. that's very troubled, you know, that really seems to need help. It's another thing to try to reach out to that person that seems to have it all together, but they just don't really have a need for religion in their life.
Yeah, I mean, one group I think that does a really good job with being very intentional about their evangelization. Kent, I think you had a close encounter of the Mormon kind recently. Where, you know, this is the time of year where, you know, Mormon missionaries, you know, they tend to be, you know, the 19 to 22 year olds are out in our neighborhoods, you know, not, you know, dress, you know, wearing, you know, suits and ties and carrying their Bible and or maybe the Book of Mormon and knocking on doors. And so they take Mormons. That's something to really respect about how their faith commitments is that they take that aspect of evangelization very seriously.
Right. And Kent, you were sharing with us how that Catholic radio bumper sticker is the perfect antidote.
Yeah. It's one of those situations, you know, nothing against the Mormons or anything like that. They're great people. And I was, you know, there were a couple young gentlemen who were walking up my driveway yesterday, and I was almost looking forward to a chance to talk to them.
Sure.
Yeah, here's my chance to evangelize a little bit. They got about five steps up my driveway, saw the Catholic Radio Indy bumper sticker on the back of my car, pointed at it, turned around, and walked away.
That's such a great story.
I knew it was a great way to advertise Catholicism, but I didn't know it was Mormon repellent. So, you know,
yeah,
it is what it is. But, you know, for those of the Mormon faith, they are very dedicated to their faith to be able to go out and do these kinds of things. We as Catholics are called to do the same kind of thing. And so, you know, we're going to take a little time here. We're going to contact a young man named Matt Nelson, who's written a book on the subject of spreading the word and how to get past the indifference that we see in the world. So we'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest, or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
I've got the spirit.
Hi, this is Teresa Tomeo from Catholic Connection.
Hi, this is Barbara McWiggin, host of The Good Fight here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray Guarendi, host of The Doctor Is In here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta, and you can join me for Cresta in the Afternoon here on Catholic Radio Indy.
The best of EWTN plus great local programming. That's what you get when you support Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Timothy O'Donnell, and still in the cave with me is Mark Tuttle and our producer Kent Blanford, and we are delighted to welcome back into the Catholic Cave Matt Nelson, who was with us a year ago. Matt is an author. He's a Catholic apologist. You can catch his blog at reasonablecatholic.com. A year ago, he released a book, and it was called, and that's when we had him in the cave, and it was called just whatever, how to help the spiritually indifferent find beliefs that matter. And we're going to pick up where that conversation left off a year ago. But Matt, welcome back to the Catholic Cave.
Tim and Mark, thanks for having me back.
Great to have you back. Now, our listeners, I can pick up already, you've got a little bit of twang in your voice. So maybe tell us, are you from Milwaukee? Where are you from?
No, I'm actually from a little farther north. I'm in central Canada.
Aha! Yes, I thought as much.
Yeah.
Well, it's so, great to have you here.
Good pickup. Well, thank you. Yeah, no, it's good to be with you all the way from all up here in the frozen north.
Okay, I bet. Is it starting to thaw yet?
Yeah, no, it is. It's actually quite warm. I always get kind of caught. You know, I work for Bishop Barron's Word on Fire Institute, so pretty much everybody I work with is American. And I always get confused trying to explain the temperature because we deal in Celsius here in Canada, and you guys are doing the Fahrenheit thing.
Oh, right.
But, it's hot here, though. So we kind of get both extremes. The winter's quite cold, and the summer's beautiful. So.
Oh, that's fantastic. But I got to imagine Canadian hot might be different than Arizona hot.
yeah. Maybe it's quite different.
Yeah, I think everything is different than Arizona hot.
Right. <I'm> not...
Yeah,
but it's a dry heat.
Yeah. Like the dryness really matters, right?
Well, it doesn't take much to say that the weather is nice or warm or hot when the winters get as cold as they do here. So,
right. I bet.
Yeah.
Hey, so Matt, tell us, remind our listeners a little bit, share a little bit about, you know, some of the themes of your book, and then we'll pick up and kind of maybe get an update from you on kind of how you see the state of affairs now, and then also I think we want to get to during the show that last chapter on, you know, practical solutions and spend some time with that. But tell us a little bit about some of the themes of your book.
Sure. Essentially, what I set out to do with Just Whatever is to give people through the route of apologetics. Like there's different ways and different stages of evangelization when we're dealing with people who really just don't care or don't want to take religion seriously. But what I wanted to do was provide direction for the three most common kinds of indifference in the world. What I would at least say are the three most common kinds of religious indifference in the world. So for those that are listening that heard the last interview that I did with Mark, they'll remember that there were three kinds of indifference that I laid out. There's closed religious indifference, which is an extreme closed-mindedness towards religion that we would see with atheists or other kinds of skeptics. There's open religious indifference, which is an extreme open-mindedness towards religion. So that would be like something that we see in the New Age movement. People that, or, you know, it's pretty common, I think, on college campuses where people say, well, I have no right to say anybody else's religion is any less true or less good than my own. So all religions are equally true and equally good, and therefore all religious founders are equally great. And so Jesus gets put on a pedestal with Buddha and Muhammad and other spiritual leaders. So, and then the third kind of indifference we talked about is denominational indifference, which is the kind of religious indifference that we run into within Christianity itself. You know, we all know that there's thousands of denominations of Christianity, and we all on some point find places of disagreement. And so many of us are concerned with, you know, charitably working through those disagreements and trying to find ways to reconcile. But there are some Christians that will say, well, I don't want to offend anybody. I have no right to tell another Christian that what they believe isn't true. And so what we get is this denominational indifference where people take the stance that it doesn't matter whether you're Catholic or Lutheran or Baptist or non-denominational. Mm-hmm. As long as you believe in Jesus, that's good enough, and the rest isn't as important. And so, anyways, those are the three kinds of indifference that I discuss in the book. And, you know, I wrote it for Catholic Answers Press, and so I took a distinctly apologetic approach to it, giving people answers to the questions that I think would come up or the objections I think would come up with those who are of those three groups of indifferentists.
Yeah, the open-minded indifference, you know, whether it's open-minded religious or whether it's open-minded denominationally. That's a tough word to say.
Try to spell it.
It's an interesting problem because it's almost the opposite of what we usually think of. We usually think of trying to get past differences in belief and trying to find that common ground of agreement. And here it's almost like you have to sort of force the differences to the forefront and kind of try to get the person to acknowledge that, yes, indeed, there are differences. And yes, indeed, we do disagree. And no, we don't have this great big common body of belief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is something that I talked about in the last part of my book, which I know we're going to talk about eventually here, is that we don't necessarily, when we're in a live evangelization scenario, we're not just going to jump in to immediate apologetics. Like, I mean, there might be opportunities for us to do that, but in most cases, there's going to have to be a sort of relationship building that happens before we can disarm somebody enough to truly offer our own objections to them. But, you know, ultimately with somebody that wants to make that sort of claim about the equality among all religions or all religious leaders in terms of truth or goodness, there's one, like, kind of bluntly logical approach where you say, well, is there a difference between 2 plus 2 equaling 4 and 2 plus 2 equaling 5? Can they both be true? And obviously they cannot. And we kind of run into the same sort of thing when we look at the different world religions. I mean, Christianity claims that Jesus Christ was the Son of God, and not just the Son of God, but when we say Son of God, we mean the divine Son of God, one of a Trinity, one person from the Trinity of persons. If we talk to a Muslim or to a Jew, they're going to disagree with us on that. So they can't all be true. If we just follow the basic laws of logic, we can't endorse this open indifference. And the same would go with denominational indifference as well. So there's an underlying philosophy of relativism behind these two kinds of indifference. That's one approach that we could take from the standpoint of apologetics, is just to show them that. But another approach, we're talking to somebody who is a devout Christian that loves Jesus, but just feels really uncomfortable with this idea of focusing down on disagreements between denominations. We might say, well, you love Jesus, right? Well, what if you knew that only one church on earth was 100% faithful to the teachings of Christ? What if you knew that there was one church on earth that was teaching exactly what Jesus taught and was not teaching anything that Jesus did not teach? And if you knew that there was a church like that, would you want to be part of it? Would you want to know which one it is? And that's another good conversation starter, because we should, I mean, Jesus is our teacher as much as he is our savior. If Jesus taught, if there are specific teachings that Jesus taught, and if there's other things that are caricatures or just false representations of what he taught, then we should want to get away from the errors and move towards the truth. And anyone who truly loves Jesus is going to see that. So those are just a couple ways that we might approach that particular kind of indifferentist.
We're talking with Matt Nelson, author and Catholic apologist. He's the author of the book Just Whatever, How to Help the Spiritually Indifferent Find Beliefs That Matter. And Matt, you know, when I run across somebody that I would describe as indifferent, the indifference seems to manifest itself almost in a moral indifference. You know, it's not so much a, I guess, based on a rational belief system, but it's really based on this idea that Christianity ultimately, or any religion, ultimately just, it doesn't kind of matter. I go about my daily life, I live my life, I'm a halfway decent person. Religion itself, it proposes this afterlife that may or may not exist, but ultimately even that doesn't really matter for how I live my life. How do you approach somebody that's kind of got that sort of moral indifference?
Yeah, I mean, this is this is something that Bishop Barron has talked a lot about, you know, because in this day and age, because there's such dominance of the philosophies of individualism and relativism, where truth is seen as by many people as like whatever you want it to be, right? Like what's true for you is true for you, but what's true for me is true for me. And what's true for you and what's true for me might be two different things, two contradictory things even, but I have no right to tell you you're wrong. Or just this individualism where like, this just do it mentality of live and let live, like you do your thing and I'll do mine. It's increasingly difficult, it seems, to speak to anything in regards to objective truth to people, like which religion is true, to say one religion is true among others and one action, one human behavior is better than another. What ends up happening is leading with truth or with what is good and what is not good for human beings becomes increasingly difficult. And so what Bishop Barron has recommended is that we lead with the beautiful, that we find a new approach to evangelizing the indifferent of the modern world. And I think that this is an interesting approach. He says, beauty is the arrowhead of evangelization. So you'll notice with anything that's ever been produced by Word on Fire, there's this faithfulness to beauty. Everything from the Catholicism series to the books that are published to the Word on Fire Institute and the courses that we're creating there, everything is pleasing to the eye. And the music is beautiful, and you know there's a real sort of captivating sense to these things that doesn't immediately necessarily capture the mind, but kind of pulls on the heart. And then from there, there's a slow unraveling of arguments and addressing of what's true and good. So I think that what we need to do is maybe think about how we can lead with the beautiful in these situations where there's a sort of moral indifference. And everybody knows, because everybody has a conscience, that there really is a best way to live, or at least there are some ways to live, and some ways are better than others. And all it takes is for us to get somebody to take that conversation seriously, and they'll start to admit that. And that's the problem, is sometimes these conversations about religion or whatever, they start unseriously, right? Like, you watch Richard Dawkins sit down with John Lennox or other theists or believers who have had debates with him, and there's a sort of lack of seriousness on Dawkins' part. And you kind of see that with the new atheist. What we've got to try to do is break through that so that it ends up being a heart-to-heart, like, person-to-person, maybe across the kitchen table, looking into each other's eyes, really listening to each other, and really asking questions that are prying questions, in the sense they're going to draw out serious responses. So I think that's what we want to aim for.
That's very helpful, Matt. What would you say are some of the causes, or how does one become spiritually indifferent? Are we sort of is that sort of our innate state, and then we need to be educated, informed in the faith, and moved out of that state of indifferentism? Or is it something that we maybe are raised in a particular faith tradition, and then we fall into it, or sort of drift into indifferentism over time, or is there something else going on? How does one become spiritually indifferent? And I ask because when we pivot into solutions, that might be helpful to know.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm still trying to figure this out. I mean, I think
okay, good, me too.
yeah. Well, the hard thing is there's a lot of factors, I think. Like, there's no one factor. I think that the rise of individualism and hedonism, or like this sort of pleasure-seeking mentality from the 60s and onward, I think set a prime breeding ground for indifferentism. Even stretching back farther philosophically into the Enlightenment, some of the Enlightenment thinkers who came forth and really pressed down on religion, and you know, because of the scientific revolution, started to pull back from some of the more metaphysical considerations that were sort of just a part of medieval philosophy. those were kind of thrown out the window and set the stage for religious skepticism, which, you know, has led to then the rise of something like the new atheism today, which has really taken off since the early 2000s. And, you know, these kind of original new atheists like Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and Bill Nye and Bill Maher and these guys, they have followers, and they have a lot of them, and a lot of them are young, right? And then they have other, you know, accomplices, if you want to call them that, people that have adopted the same sort of angry tone towards religion who are teaching in the universities. And so this rise of the new atheism and the effect of this sort of intellectually unserious kind of atheism, which has then infiltrated into our youth, then creates this atmosphere of ridiculing religion and not taking it seriously as well. So I think that this rise of the new atheism has definitely been a factor. And now, a lot of those guys have sold... Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, now you mentioned the Enlightenment, which I think is, you know, I think when you kind of look at the root of this indifference, the Enlightenment certainly looms large. And one of the great things about the Catholic tradition is we never encounter these problems for the first time. We have a huge tradition of philosophers, of thinkers, of saints that have encountered these problems before. And in your book, you bring up one of them as kind of the leading proponent of the antidote to this spiritual indifference, and that's Blaise Pascal. Tell us a little bit about Pascal and why he kind of had some of the answers for this indifferentism.
Pascal is a 17th century physicist and philosopher. I guess some people call him a theologian, although he wouldn't be a theologian in the modern sense. He just thought deeply about theological questions. He's also a kind of co-father of probability theory. And so, he's a mathematician, physicist, and religious thinker, which is, you know, he was kind of living in the ages of the polymath. These guys that were geniuses and seemingly unrelated disciplines. And that's who Blaise Pascal was. He grew up as a somewhat nominal Catholic, but he had a profound mystical experience as an adult, which led to a major conversion. So he started to get to work on a book of Christian apologetics. And so that work started out as a series of thoughts. He was just kind of jotting down thoughts that were eventually going to be compiled into a work of Christian apologetics. But unfortunately, Pascal passed away before he could write that book. So what we have today are his thoughts, or his notes that were going to be made into a work of apologetics. And those thoughts are known as pensées, which are, that's just French for thoughts. And so Pascal is instrumental for me in writing this book because he was one of those people who really thought deeply about religious indifference and the causes of it. And so what I did is, from those pensées, there's a long section in there where he talks about religious indifference and the sort of psychology behind it. But he doesn't just lament about the problem. He then offers an approach to evangelizing the indifferent, which I think is as relevant today as it was in the 17th century. And that's essentially what I based my solutions chapter around in the book. So did you want me to get into those
yeah, things? Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
Okay. So the first step for Pascal is to show the complementarity between faith and reason. And so this makes sense because apologetics is essentially giving a rational account for why we believe what we believe. And we can only do that for somebody who believes that a rational account can be made for the faith. And in order to show somebody that, we need to show that faith and reason are complementary, that they're not opposed to each other. And so this makes sense that this would be the first step. So Pascal says, faith and reason go together. Reason can take us only so far, and then eventually we are justified rationally to surrender the intellect, and that's where faith comes in. And he uses the word surrender, but he doesn't mean surrender in the sense of like, oh, and anything that you accept beyond that point of reason, beyond the limits of reason, is irrational. No, He's saying that the surrender of the intellect that happens when we believe in the mysteries of the faith, those are rational beliefs because reason has gotten us there to the point where we can rationally then surrender the intellect and by an act of the will be justified rationally to accept the mysteries of the faith. Bishop Barron says, you know, there's a spectrum, right? There's the infrarational, those are superstitious things, right? Like I have this crazy habit that I've had since a kid where I don't step on cracks on the sidewalk.
And, oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, and like as an athlete, like anytime I was, you know, walking to play, you know, hockey or if I had a football game when I was younger or whatever, like I was not stepping on cracks for sure on the way there. And if I somehow stumbled and did, you know, I thought the world was coming to an end. It's superstition. It's not something that I truly believe is in a cause-effect relationship with the world. But I have this weird habit of not stepping on cracks because of the way I was as a kid. That would be considered, like that sort of superstition that, you know, athletes have and that sort of thing, would be considered infrational. Like there's no real reason to believe there's a cause-effect relationship there. Okay, and then but then there's also then after the infrarational, if we move to the right on the spectrum, we see the rational. Okay, so from the infrarational or below the rational, we then run into the rational, or the things we can know through the light of human reason. And if we continue over from left to right, we move from the infrarational to the rational and then to the suprarational. So the suprarational are things that we're merited to believe because of what we know by reason. So, like, I've never been to China, but I believe that China exists because I think there's good evidence that China exists. Ultimately, though, I have to go by the authority of others, take the testimony of others and accept their testimony as true. But I don't do that for no reason at all. I do that for good reason. That's how religious faith is, and that's how Pascal saw it. And so that's the sort of distinctions we want to make in this first step.
Yeah, I think that that's crucial because I think so many people have the misconception that religious belief is just kind of made up. You know, whether it was made up directly or whether it's made up indirectly, there's no real rational reason to, as Pascal put it, surrender your intellect. Where, no, we have this stuff on fairly good authority. You know, there's a historical timeline. There's a historicity to Catholicism. You can go back and verify kind of the historical facts. And, you know, that gives it a certain rational basis that, you know, that it is obviously not just sort of made up out of whole cloth.
Yeah, absolutely. St. Thomas Aquinas distinguished between the preambles of the faith and articles of faith. The preambles are these things we can know by the light of human reason alone that, in a way, prepare us then to believe the articles of faith, which are things we can only know by the revelation of God. So, like, preambles of the faith would be things like the existence of God or some of the attributes that we can know of God. These are things that we can know by observing nature and then drawing philosophical conclusions based off of our observations. So people know, like, St. Thomas's five ways, for example, begin with the fact of change in the world. And from that, Thomas is able to argue from change, or what he calls motion, to an unmoved mover, which would be God, a God who's purely actual, has no potentiality, a God who's absolutely, unlimitedly perfect. Those are the preambles of the faith. So you think of it like a flower, right? There's like the stem that's in that. There's the stem and the roots that are hidden under the dirt, and then there's the rest of the stem, the leaves, and the flower that are above the dirt. Well, everything below the dirt is what can be known by reason. You can't have that bit of the flower that's above the dirt unless you have the roots, everything that's rooted in the soil. So what we know by reason is the roots, or that which kind of holds the faith together rationally. But then what's above the dirt, the flower and the petals, all of that is what we know because of what we've been able to reason to and because of what God has revealed to us. Now, faith and reason, what we can know by faith and what we can know by reason, These things are both considered true knowledge. It's just that one comes from God himself and the other one comes from the light of our own reason. But because God can't contradict himself, because he's truth itself, both what he reveals to us and what he reveals to us indirectly through nature can't contradict itself. And that's why we would say reason and faith are complementary.
We're talking with Matt Nelson, author and Catholic apologist, and we're talking about religious indifferentism. And we've been talking a little bit about the philosophy of Blaise Pascal and some of his thoughts on how to get past this indifferentism. He thought deeply about it. It was a problem that came up frequently for him and in his time and age, and we're seeing the same thing now. So once you've established, Matt, once you've established this sort of compatibility between faith and reason, what was Pascal's sort of recommendation for the next step?
Okay, so once you've established a complementarity between faith and reason, then we can move into now a sort of appeal to the heart. So what Pascal says is, next we need to show, or we should make Christianity attractive and make good men wish it were true. So this is important. Now, I think it's important that he mentions this idea of making good men or good people wish it were true. Because what he's essentially saying is, like, there are some people out there that are not going to be intellectually honest, that are not going to, no matter what you do, they're just not going to be in a place where they're going to accept anything you say. And so there's a sort of implicit acknowledgement here that these three steps are only going to work if you can truly get somebody to the point where they're going to take you in the conversation seriously. And just as a side note, that's what I would say. Like, there are going to be situations when we evangelize where somebody's just simply not going to take us seriously. And to give us our best shot to get there with somebody, I think we just need to remember that even though we have the apologetic arguments, we need not to be in a rush to use them. Because as soon as, like, if someone's telling you their problems with the faith, and you immediately jump in with your rebuttals, then you immediately kind of show your hand and show that you're just there to contend with them. But if you just kind of accept at first the things that they're saying that you disagree with, and maybe ask more questions and let them really fully show their hand, then they start to see you're not just interested in, like, showing them your apologetics chops or showing them why they're wrong. Rather, you're interested in having a real dialogue with them. And then from there, you might be able to kind of convert them from this closed-mindedness and this unwillingness to take the conversation seriously to actually taking it seriously. So just as a side note. But essentially what Pascal is saying here, make good men wish it were true, is that there's an attractiveness to Christianity. Number one, because the story of salvation history is essentially a story of God after man's heart. God wants to repair what's been broken in us, and he wants to offer us the fulfillment of all our desires. And so the bottom line is, and this is something C.S. Lewis talks about in a number of places, including Surprised by Joy and Mere Christianity, and that's just simply that in this life, we're never fully satisfied. Like, we might have the nicest boat at the lake. We might drive the nicest car in town. We might have the most lovely spouse. We never find our absolute and undying fulfillment in anything in this world. And so C.S. Lewis concludes through a sort of argument, moves through it more deductively than I'm doing it now, but he eventually, says, so that means that we must be meant for something in the next world, because every human being, like, they desire food or water, desires the fulfillment of all their desires. Therefore, that fulfillment of all desires, since it's not in this world, must lie in the next world or in the next life. So I think, like, laying out arguments like this, will make good men, or, make people realize that, yeah, there's something to this. Christianity is offering something that I just cannot find in this life. That's one approach that you could take with indifferentists in the second step.
What, Matt, what would you say is the third step?
So the third step, so once you've shown the complementarity of faith and reason and you've made the person you're talking to wish Christianity were true. You've made Christianity attractive. The third step is now to show that it's true. And this is where apologetics come in.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is really where we then, depending on the stage of the game that the person we're talking to is at, you know, we might still need, they might think at this point, yeah, I wish Christianity was true. I wish Catholicism was true. But I just don't believe it. I don't, you know, I still have major objections to ever buying into this.
Mm-hmm.
You still might have to start with the most basic of questions, like, does God exist? And you'll have to offer arguments for that. Depends on the stage of the game. But some of the, you know, there's a really good article that I would recommend anybody who's really interested in going farther in this area of apologetics. I think a good article that kind of acts as a theory for doing modern apologetics, which fits into this third step, is an article called Pre-Christian Apologetics, written by Edward Faser.
That's one of Mark's favorite guys.
yeah. And he's one of my favorites, too. And so he wrote this article a few years ago. But if you just go to Google and Google Pre-Christian Apologetics Ed Faser, this will pop up and give it a read. And Faser suggests we need to return back to scholastic metaphysics, lay a groundwork for the kind of underlying, how we see the underlying substructure of reality. And from there then, because everybody has assumptions about why reality is the way it is, and Faser's just saying, if everybody has those beliefs, what we need to do is start with the most basic questions, metaphysical questions, that are going to kind of lay the groundwork for the rest of the arguments we're going to offer. Because the best arguments ever offered happen to be the classical theistic arguments offered by, you know, thinkers like St. Thomas Aquinas or St. Augustine or the Neoplatonists. And so there's a groundwork that needs to be laid. So he, in that pre-Christian apologetics article, he lays down a progression from metaphysics to arguments for God to arguments for the existence of the soul. And he says the big mistake that a lot of people make nowadays is they kind of jump right into biblical apologetics or arguing for, say, the resurrection of Jesus. But that's just going to sound like a whole bunch of hogwash if you haven't laid down the metaphysical foundations for whether a God could exist or whether somebody could survive death because they have a soul. These are all things that we need to establish first. So I would recommend that article for sure.
Oh, that sounds super helpful. Well, we've been talking with Matt Nelson. Matt is an author and Catholic apologist. You also work at the Word on Fire Institute. You blog at reasonablecatholic.com. And it was a year ago that you were in the cave, and because your book had just been released, which I highly recommend. It's called Just Whatever. Actually, I kind of like to say that to Mark all the time. Just whatever, Mark. Just whatever.
Yeah, that was always one of the difficulties was, how do we pronounce this now on the radio whenever you say it? Should I say it like a snotty?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
I'm one of them, but...
So, and the subtitle of the book is How to Help the Spiritually Indifferent Find Beliefs That Matter. And I really like that subtitle, too, because as you were talking about earlier, Matt, there are, when you look at different worldviews, different religions, there are contradictory truth claims when they're examined closely, meaning that, some of these claims can't. God can't be a Trinity and not a Trinity at the same time in the same way, right? So we need to raise that as a question and then do our best to find a satisfactory answer to that and then move to the next step. So we've really loved having you here once again in the Catholic Cave. People want to follow your work or keep in touch with you. What's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, well, I would definitely want to point people towards wordonfire.institute, where most of my focus in the last year has been in creating video content, myself and then along with other Catholic thinkers, from philosophers, theologians, sociologists, and more, in the Word on Fire Institute. So I'd point people over to wordonfire.institute and encourage them to sign up and become a member of our great community there. where you'll be able to interact with me personally within the Institute, but also reasonablecatholic.com is where you can find all my work that I'm publishing in different places. So those are the two.
I've been a huge fan of Bishop Barron for a long time, and what really drew me to him initially and still to this day is I love his movie reviews. Just because I love movies. I just, his insights in the movies have always, there's lots of other great, the Catholicism series, as you mentioned, magnificent. We've used that at the parish several times and stuff. But I just, I just have a real affinity for his insights into movies. So thank you for all that.
Well, thank you, Matt, for joining us here in the Catholic Cave. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor, tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
At Catholic Radio, we love to hear from you. Call us anytime. Just recently, we found this message on our voicemail.
I'm a non-Catholic that listens to your Catholic radio station, and I just wanted to thank you guys. I listen to Catholic Answers and Al Cresta sometimes, and I think her name's Teresa Tommy. I listen to her and another show or two. I appreciate it.
Call us at 317-870-8400 and let us know what you're thinking.
I just called to say, even though I'm not a Catholic, I listen to your station.
Welcome back once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell and
Ken
Blanford. We are all in the cave together, which is that's been rare.
It's been kind of rare.
Rare lately. But we just had a great interview with Matt Nelson, author of Just Whatever. And I've got to say that with the teenage eye roll, Just Whatever. How to help the spiritually indifferent find beliefs that matter. And in talking with Matt, he was talking about the importance of beauty and the importance of really drawing people to the faith, not necessarily by starting with the true or with the good, but by going with that other transcendental, the beauty. And it brings to mind a book I encountered. I got to Mass early, which for me, with my family, the way we live, that's a rarity.
Right, exactly.
But I got to Mass early, so I had a little bit of time. So I went downstairs to our parish library, which we have we're very blessed to have a pretty extensive parish library. Mm. And I went down and I found this book that was written in the 1940s, late 1940s, right after World War II.
Latin?
No, it was in English, but it was on evangelization. So it would have been in the time period, you know, before Vatican II with the Latin Mass. And I was struck by the commonality of all of these evangelization stories that they started their evangelization by inviting the person they were introducing to Catholicism, not to Mass, but to Eucharistic adoration. To that time of peace, to that time of music, to that time of beauty, where it was just really literally having that close encounter with the beauty of Christ. Now, not necessarily with the truth or the goodness, but the beauty that's present there during Eucharistic adoration. And, you know, I think for anybody that wants to evangelize somebody that is somewhat interested in Catholicism, that's where I would say start. You know, start by bringing them to Eucharistic adoration, explaining what it is, because there I think you kind of get to the heart of what Catholicism is.
You know, that's a great insight. I hadn't really thought about that before, and that is a wonderful approach. And one of the places that I think would be very powerful is your parish. Your adoration chapel is exceptional because it's so symbolic, too, you know, with the way it's laid out, with you've got sort of the Ark of the Covenant, and you've got the monstrance.
And the desert.
So and the desert.
Yep, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you
helps you make these connections visually. Yeah, that's that might, so Our Lady of Mount Carmel, there in Carmel, Indiana, is a great place to
go. And that Eucharistic adoration is open 24/7. Although at night you kind of have to, you got to know a guy to be able to get in. But
usually have passcodes or whatever for security reasons.
Right.
But yeah.
But yeah, it is open all the time to just stop by and pray. You know, the other thing that struck me talking with Matt, I found this interesting, is he was talking about Blaise Pascal's antidote to spiritual indifference. Mm-hmm. And the three steps that he laid out, the showing the compatibility between faith and reason, and then trying to get the person to sort of wish and want Catholicism to be true, you know, appealing to the will and that desire for Catholicism to be true, and then showing that Catholicism is true. Right. And Matt jumps back to apologetics, but from Pascal and from others, I get this feeling that it's more based on your works, based on how you live your life. So if you're looking at evangelization over a longer period of time, that last one often isn't necessarily through a mode of speaking, but it's showing in your daily life that Catholicism is true, that it does transform. And when I look at that pattern, I see our last three popes. Really, in a lot of ways, this is how the new evangelization has unfolded, starting with John Paul II. And one of the sort of subtext to his pontificate was this compatibility of faith and reason. I mean, he wrote Fides et Ratio.
Right.
So, that was explicit. Yeah. But, the rest of his pontificate really was demonstrating the compatibility between faith and reason and all the different doctrines. And then that was followed up by Benedict. And when you read Benedict, first off, his very first encyclical is an appeal to the will. His pontificate was directed towards that will and that desire for Catholicism to be true, that need for it to be true within our lives, and how Christ sort of fills that big God-shaped hole that is in our relativist culture.
Right.
And then that's finally been followed up by Pope Francis, who has really, more than anything, kind of shown by trying to urge the faithful to live a life, to live the Catholic life, to put all of this that we've gotten from the past two popes, to put it into practice, and really to be those feet on the ground and be that emergency hospital, as he put it, for sinners out in the world. So Pascal's three steps, that's really what the Church has followed and what the Holy Spirit has led the Church to follow through the last three popes.
Yeah, I certainly see where you're coming from with that. I also was thinking, reflecting back in our conversation with Matt Nelson, too, that I was thinking, one of the barriers to opening up someone to those three steps that you just rehearsed brilliantly one of the things I think that we psychologically that's operating maybe at least in the background, if not the foreground, is people generally want to avoid conflict. And so they don't like the idea of provoking arguing, not in a philosophical sense, but in an angry sense. And so a mode of indifferentism can be based in what, as you mentioned, relativism. And that system of relativism is that provides a kind of conceptual framework that allows me not to have to engage you, because I'm committed to saying might be true for you, but it's not true for me. You have your truth and I have my own truth, and therefore there's no need or avenue or point of engaging you with what Pascal has laid out or Matt Nelson laid out in his book. And so I think there's one of our real challenges in trying to engage over spiritual indifferentism is that's one of the barriers I think we're going to run into, because people might see that that's a real barrier.
Yeah, that's kind of the modern conundrum in a lot of ways, is we've gotten into this world of relativism where my viewpoint is my viewpoint, your viewpoint is your viewpoint, and the only way we're going to resolve this is by me really kind of exerting myself over you in one way or another. So,
or simply walking away.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all the time we have for The Catholic Cave. That's it for this week. For Mark Tuttle, for Mr. Timothy O'Donnell, I'm Kent Blanford. Until next time, may God bless.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400. Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.